Welcoming back my guest tonight, Professor Stan McDaniel. We're talking about the Mars space, and recall now that a couple of weeks ago, there was a major announcement about NASA claiming to have evidence of life, prehistoric life on Mars, and of course, my opinion is that this takes us really nowhere at this particular point, and there's probably a very political reason for this. Stan, now, going back to what you're talking about, tell us a little bit about what led up to the McDaniel Report, and then we'll launch into this other stuff.
Sure. I picked up on the fact that they'd launched the Mars Observer back in 1992, and actually I was teaching a class in questions about how we know anything, how do we come to know things. In philosophy, that's called epistemology. And I started nosing around and found out that, I was looking to find out if the Mars Observer was going to try to re-photograph the Mars face, because I had seen a couple of books on this way back in 1987, 88. And then I became aware that there was a problem, that NASA was really unlikely to re-photograph this object. So I started just writing a short paper, about 30 pages, I thought it would be. I called it the Mars Brief, and it was sort of an analysis of the arguments I was hearing from NASA people as to why there wasn't any point in bothering with the face on Mars. And as I worked on this, I got in touch with more and more people who had been involved in this and who had been getting letters back from congressmen and from NASA, and they started sending me copies of their letters. And pretty soon I found I had a mass of information on all this, and my small paper turned into close to 200 pages. And initially it was just distributed to congressmen and a few scientists, just in order to possibly influence policy. We did it as a photocopied, spiral-bound volume, and then the interest in it got strong enough that it was published by North Atlantic Press, and it seems to have been actively read since then.
And now it's a book.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Now, to a rational mind like yours, what would NASA's big reason be for perhaps maybe denying or shirking off their responsibility, their scientific responsibility, to at least go up there and take a look?
We have some definite new statements from NASA as a result of their press conference a couple weeks ago, where they were announcing the meteorite business, which we can go into later, I guess. And in that press conference, NASA administrators made it clear that there was very little likelihood that they were going to really bother themselves trying to re-photograph the region of the face. So we can start from that point, that they don't look like they're going to do it, or that they don't want to, or they're not interested. Now, as to why, there are two theories. One is that there's some conspiracy on their part because they don't want to reveal to the public the fact that possibly there were intelligent beings other than ourselves in the universe and visiting the solar system perhaps even eons ago. The other theory is that they're incompetent scientists. I don't know of any alternative, by the way. that they're just afraid to look, or they're not comfortable with the possibilities, and so they just write it off as an impossibility to start with, and that's incompetency in science, because science shouldn't work that way, in my view.
I wholeheartedly agree with you too, because the fact that they hold themselves out to be a scientific organization, their charter is to conduct science, but from what we've learned, particularly with the early 1960s Brookings Report, that there is possibly policy here involved that might be at work as far as trying to suppress information of this sort.
Yes, there's this is what lends fuel to the conspiracy theory. I want to point out that I don't advocate that theory any more than the other one at the moment. I'm still relatively neutral, although I'll maybe correct that a bit later. But Yeah, there were two major pieces of information I found. One was called the Wolpe accusation. There was a representative, a Democratic representative from Michigan, named Howard Wolpe. And there were articles in the papers in 1992 of charges made against NASA by Wolpe to the effect that NASA had issued instructions to its personnel as to how to avoid Freedom of Information Act access to various NASA documents. Mm-hmm. And that's a very strange situation. I have a copy of one of the newspaper articles on this.
I'd say it's pretty damning, too.
Yes. Now, that was dropped. There was an investigation begun, I believe, and it was dropped and disappeared from view, and no one ever followed it up. So we don't know yet how right or wrong Wolpe was. But he certainly had some grounds for making this charge. He wouldn't have done it unless he had. And then there's the Brookings Institution report, which was produced for NASA, written around 1959 and finished in 1960. And in that report, which was on the peaceful use of outer space, there is a section on what would happen if evidence of intelligent life extraterrestrial were found. And in that, the scientists writing up the report, of which there were many, I think 25, 30 very highly placed people, said that it's possible that scientists in NASA discovering intelligence on another planet, or evidence of it, might want to keep it secret for the reason that they might be concerned about public reaction, public disturbances, possibly the fall of governments. As a matter of fact, it's kind of humorous because they even talked about groups such as Buddhists who they thought would go crazy if they heard about this. They apparently knew very little about Buddhism. Most Buddhists would think that's just perfectly fine.
I think probably it might have been even a deeper reason for it.
I would think so.
I think it's probably power and money and then balances of power.
Yes, I think they were concerned. And then also it said that another result might be the impact on scientists, because scientists have a big stake in being on top of it all. And if they found evidence of greater intelligence than their own, they might just be so upset that they couldn't deal with it.
Mm.
And that's an interesting point. Note that the Brookings report did not say that NASA should keep these things secret. It just said that NASA might want to investigate it, think about it.
Give it some thought.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
Attorney, my guest is Professor Stan McDaniel, and he is the author of the McDaniel Report, a book about, we're talking about NASA and some of its implications. And, of course, as we know, NASA recently has announced that there's a possibility that they have discovered evidence of life, or past life at least, on Mars. Stan, kind of take us into this, what's happening now. I understand that there were some French fellows that were wanting to go there. How does that play into this?
Well, we talked about this privately earlier, didn't we, Mike?
Yeah.
The NASA announcement was a kind of a bombshell, because they made the announcement, first of all, just about 3 months. Let's see, this is August. Yeah, 3 months before they're going to launch the replacement for the Mars Observer, which is the Mars Global Surveyor. And they're also launching in December a Mars Pathfinder, which will actually have a little lander that might roam around on Mars. And that's part of a long-term Mars exploration program on NASA's part, designed to last on into 2000 and beyond. So when they made the announcement about the finding of possible biologically originated fossils in meteorites thought to come from Mars, they gave a tremendous boost in public interest and even in governmental interest in exploring Mars. Now, it happened that, coincident to that, according to information I received, which I haven't heard any more about it, but my understanding is that the European Space Agency had before it just recently a number of plans for the direction in which they were to go. And the European Space Agency is, of course, a counterpart to NASA, in which various European governments are involved. So they were deciding which way they wanted their research to go. And among the projects was one that had been sent in officially and had an official place in the schedule of proposed projects. That was a low-cost mission specifically to investigate the area of the face, which is called Cydonia, by the way. And there even was a contact of mine who was involved with the French Space Agency who was aware of that proposal and knew about my report and other scientific papers that were related to this. I heard that the European Space Agency has decided to abandon Mars exploration and instead focus on the study of cosmic radiation in outer space. I also heard that the predominant people involved there are astronomers, and astronomers find such things as cosmic radiation and so on much more interesting, supposedly. So it looked like the European Space Agency was about to give up Mars completely, and it may still be, but it's possible that the NASA announcement may have changed the picture a bit as to what the ESA might be doing.
Could it possibly be that NASA is trying to run, say, damage control? Trying to basically corner the market, get up there first before anybody else, and maybe be able to control any data that comes down?
Well, it's certainly been suggested by a number of people that NASA's announcement about the biological life forms, these are fossils, of course, not live ones, but that announcement may be in preparation for more announcements later. And NASA certainly has preempted the field now in terms of public interest in Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there could be all those kinds of political considerations.
What do you think the other shoe could be? When the other shoe drops, what do you think it could be?
Well, of course, it could be that there may be artifacts on Mars. You know, the face isn't the only thing up there that's suspicious. There's objects scattered all over the surface to some degree. We've only looked at a very small number of them. There are some objects, one of them we've called the runway, and it's a very peculiar set of features. Unfortunately, NASA thinks that whenever you mention something like the runway, that the scientists studying it think they've discovered an actual aircraft runway, which is not correct. Those are just names used for convenience.
Right. Tell us about the Cyrus-Cena quadrangle, because apparently there's like you just mentioned, there are other things now that are being discovered, oddities that are going on up there.
Right. Well, that's certainly one of them. We led right into that, didn't we?
Yeah.
yes, I have put the first public photographs of this feature on my webpage, and it's in my section called News Updates. There is a researcher in England named Ananda Sirisena. He's a British national of East Indian origin. And actually, I think he's from Ceylon originally.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been studying the area for many years now. He has found objects, among them a number of four-sided structures, pyramidal shapes, which have a very peculiar status, because geologically four-sided structures don't normally result from wind erosion, for example. And among them is what we've called the Cyrus-Cena quadrangle. And it's a little hard to describe. The image is there on my webpage, which maybe we can give the address of at some point. But it's essentially a rectangular cut out of the side of a cliff that has two walls coming out from it, apparent walls, and at the end of one of the walls, actually that wall, the second wall I'm talking about, looks almost like it could have been a breakwater or a dock, a wharf sort of structure.
Mm-hmm.
At the very tip of it is what looks like a five-pointed structure shaped like a star. And it's really pretty visible. You can pick out the star if you look real closely at the image that I have. on the web page.
I'm looking at it right now, and it is quite interesting.
Yes, to me, it's a fascinating object. I did show it to a geologist who said he thought it could easily be natural, but personally, I didn't get any further information from him as to why he thought that. Now, one of the interesting things about it, which I don't mention on the web page, is that the reason that Mr. Sirisena found it is that it's near what appears to be possibly a second face. And it's about 2 miles away from a structure that looks as though someone had started to carve a second face and quit. Now, it's very ambiguous. It could be natural, but it's about the same size and it's in exactly the same orientation as the face we know about. And the fact that this unusual feature called the quadrangle is so close makes the mystery just deeper.
Do you think that NASA has done their own independent study of this stuff and perhaps, we've talked about the possibility that the Mars Observer did transmit pictures. But, you know, looking at this stuff, it makes you wonder what they may know about this and what they're up to.
We have no evidence. NASA has consistently held that their scientists are not interested in the area because they have studied it carefully and find everything up there is natural. However, they haven't studied it carefully in terms of any reports of their studies. We can find no published papers in peer-reviewed journals or elsewhere from NASA scientists showing detailed study of any of the objects up there.
Okay.
So it's very strange for them to say they studied it carefully when they haven't ever issued any reports on it.
Okay, hold that thought. Stan, what are some of the implications of that? I mean, for example, so what? There's a possibility of life on Mars. What is this going to mean for us?
You mean the biological life?
Right. The very idea or the very discovery that there is possibly life or past life on there, what is that going to do for us? What is NASA trying to protect?
It's a powerful implication because from the contacts I have, scientists who've been looking at these meteorites, and of course we have to point out that there's still controversy as to whether they're really from Mars, and if so, whether they really show signs of microbes. But they may be. And one of the things important about that is that there are meteorites showing this that span a period of as much as 3 billion years. That wasn't pointed out by NASA. I think they were focusing on one set about 4.5 billion years old. But there could have been a period as long as 3 billion years during which Mars could support life and had water. And if that's true, there could have been evolution, there could have been intelligent species evolving, and in fact, some scientists think that the impact of a particular meteor crater called LYOT, L-Y-O-T, I think they pronounce it Leo, may have been the destruction of the Martian ecosphere and did away with all the life. So if that were the case, it's possible that the structures in the Cydonia region and other structures could have been actually built by people who evolved on Mars.
Do you think that there's how do you think it will affect? I know that in your work, you work with many disciplines, scientific disciplines, as well as probably theology and that type of thing. How would something like this stack up in those arenas?
Well, several of the major religions indicate that they would be able to accommodate the existence and evolution of other life elsewhere just fine. The fear that fundamentalist groups and so on would go crazy and start tearing down our institutions and so on may be fantasy. That might have been true maybe 50 years ago or 30 years ago even, but not today with the prevalence of science fiction throughout the pop culture, maybe in some very distant foreign countries where people haven't seen Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's not a good enough excuse for suppressing information about the nature of our universe and our possible origins.
Do you think that, and I know this probably touches a nerve, but, What do you think the connection is between, say, this particular possibility and the UFO enigma?
Oh, well.
whole can of worms, right?
Well, you know, I didn't know much about UFOs until I got into this study, and then just naturally it turned out I was in contact with people who had studied UFOs, and appearing on panels, in fact, with people very prestigious in the ufology field.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to say at this point that it looks to me like there's pretty good evidence. But whether the UFOs are originating from the same species, you might say, as the monuments on Mars, we can't say. There's no way to know. There are some curiosities. Several Mars probes have been scotched. In other words, they've disappeared. There's the famous Phobos incident, for example, the Russian
mm-hmm.
probe. Zechariah Sitchin has written some interesting stuff about that probe. Then, of course, we have the Mars Observer gone. So some people wonder if active UFO beings have, in fact, tried to stop our exploration of Mars by destroying our probes. I guess we'll find out with the Global Surveyor and the Pathfinder, because if those two go out, well, then we'll begin to really wonder.
Well, if in fact they do share the data, if it's straightforward and it comes out truthfully.
Well, the Clementine mission to the moon and then was going to go on to an asteroid. I think that was scotched because it went screwy.
Uh-huh.
And that mission, there's evidence that the images from that mission of the moon, that there's a whole section of them missing. And so far, NASA's explanation of those missing images has not been very satisfactory.
And what is that?
They said that they deliberately turned away the camera at a certain point because they wanted to save film and they didn't think it was important. Some things along those lines. There's been some stuff on the World Wide Web about that. Unfortunately, I don't have the reference right here.
I'm curious. What do you think about the claims by Richard Hoagland about structures on the moon? Do you think there are things up there?
None of the images I've seen have made sense enough to me for me to say I see anything unusual.
Okay.
I do want to say that it's possible that some of the objects are outgassings.
Which is something we know that has been occurring.
Yes, the moon is susceptible to outgassing, which is gases from underneath the surface suddenly coming out, look kind of like a kind of geyser. And one of the objects that Mr. Hoagland refers to as the shard looks to me a lot like an outgassing caught at a certain point when it was in existence and the light was on it. Other features that he's pointed at have been identified by photographic experts that I have been in touch with as photographic errors. I don't want to cast entire skepticism on it, though. Dr. Carlotta, who's done very good work on the Mars material, has also identified several objects that he thinks are worth investigating. So there may be something on the moon, but at the present time, I don't know enough about that to make a comment.
And I think, again, if there's some question, I think it's probably reasonable to maintain that it's probably wise to go up there and at least check it out.
Well, that's the important thing. The moon and Mars were singled out in early writings by people interested in this subject as among the most likely to possibly have remnants of civilizations that had visited there. One scientist named G.V. Foster did a report back in the 70s where he did an actual probability calculation, and it indicated that in the past, I think it was 400 million years, there were likely to have been as many as 450 visits from nearby stars to the solar system.
Ooh, interesting. Hold that. Welcome back, Professor Stan McDaniel. And Stan, give out your webpage address for our listeners out there as to how they can get to your webpage and get a hold of this very interesting information.
Sure, I will. It's one of these fairly long ones, but we can go for it.
Okay.
So, of course, it starts out with the usual http://, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of WWW, which is more common, the next word is Our World, OURWORLD, all one word, lowercase, of course, dot CompuServe, CompuServe, dot com, / home pages, all one word, HOMEPAGES, / And then the last word in it is an acronym that stands for McDaniel Report, and it is the letters MCDRPT. That's M as in Michael, CDRPT.
Okay, very good. Stan, with the last couple of seconds I've got left here on the program,
sure.
I'm going to give out these phone numbers for people to call on the telephone campaign. I want to thank you for being on the program, and we'll keep in touch, and as things progress, we might have you back.
Fine, fine. Let me mention this. The telephone campaign is sparked by a gentleman named Patrick Kelly, who's an activist, lives in Pasadena, California, and I just accommodated him by listing those numbers on my page.
Okay. One of the numbers you can call is the Mars Global Surveyor Office in Pasadena, California. The guy's name is Glenn Cunningham. He's the project director. 818-354-5319. And, of course, one more real quick here is the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology in Washington, D.C. That's 202-225-6371. Give them a call and let them know how you feel that you'd like to have more scientific study brought to bear on this. And I'm afraid we're out of time for tonight.